This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics, Democrat Bob Cramer, and Republican Doug O'Brien. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Nice to have you with us for this recorded edition of Beyond the Beltway. We will be talking about the election results of last week, and we have lots to talk about, not only the battle for the United States Senate, but the House is also a big night for Republicans on the gubernatorial level as well, and that is what will be our focus will be. But as we turn back the clock and we look back at the beginning of campaign 2014, here are some of the basics. The Democrats controlled the United States Senate 55 to 45. 36 U.S. Senate seats were up for re-election. 11 Republican incumbents and 10 Democratic incumbents were all expected to sail easily to re-election. Senate control thus focused on 10 states. Republicans needed a net pickup of 6 seats, and Republicans picked up 8 seats on election night. So tonight, we will continue the discussion that has been dominating the political circles around the country since last Tuesday night, and that is, what were the big themes? Because we have heard Republicans taking a lot of credit. There was a lot of talk about whether or not the president could have done more, or if candidates who lost should have invited the president in. So these are some of the things we're going to be talking about. We'll get into some of the numbers a little bit later on as well. Bob Cramer, you are a Democrat. Thanks very much for being here. It may be a tough night to be a Democrat, but thank you for being here. When you look at this campaign, one of the things that people talked about and have talked about already is whether or not Senate Democratic candidates made a mistake by not bringing Barack Obama more into the campaign, because it might have increased turnout in some sectors of their electorate that, frankly, didn't show up.
Turnout certainly was a critical issue, and it is a critical issue in all these midterm elections. I think it's probably safe to say that might have helped in certain cases. I think more emphasis, particularly on African-American turnout in kind of the media might have been useful. But look, this was the toughest map that any president has faced since John Kennedy in the Senate. There were, of the 24 states he lost for president, 80% of them were up for Senate elections this year, of which six he had lost by 19 points or more. This was extremely difficult political terrain. And I think the most significant thing, frankly, is that the day after, last Wednesday, the political battleground totally shifted to the swing states in the that are up for the presidency and for the new Senate states, so that there's a very new circumstance immediately following.
Doug O'Brien joins us. He is a Republican. Doug, would the president have made any difference had he been out there more visible for anybody in this race?
I think it would have been a wash. There is no question that the Democrat base was dispirited. The turnout was significantly lower here in the city of Chicago. Estimated it was about 5 points lower than the previous off-year election. But at the same time, more of the president would have more firmly reinforced to swing voters that this was a referendum on the direction of the country right now. And despite Bob's arguing about the intangibles of the tough map, the map had nothing to do with governorships. It had nothing to do with congressional seats. This was clearly a wave election in the Republicans' favor, no matter how they try to parse it.
Tom Bevin also joins us. He is the founder of Real Clear Politics. Tom, nice to have you back on the show.
Great to be here.
Obviously, the headline is Republican a sweep. What would the sub-headline be, in your view, about what happened last Tuesday night?
Well, there was a lot of talk leading up to the election about how this was going to be certainly a anti-Obama election, anti-Democrat, but it was also anti-establishment, anti-incumbent. But what we found out was it was really less of the latter. You had vulnerable Republicans in places, Kansas, for example. I mean, Pat Roberts was in dire straits, Sam Brownback in dire straits. They ended up pulling out victories. Rick Scott in Florida, another example of a guy who was really in deep trouble but managed to hang on, and yet all the vulnerable Democrats across the country lost. So I think it ended up being more of an anti-Democrat, it was a referendum, I think, on the president, more so than anti-incumbent.
Okay, well, I want to talk about that. And by the way, this is for the United States. The Republicans who ousted Democrats in the United States Senate, here are some of them. Tom Tillis in North Carolina, Joni Ernst in Iowa, Tom Cotton in Arkansas, Cory Gardner in Colorado, Shelley Moore Capito in West Virginia, Steve Daines in Montana, Mike Rounds in South Dakota, Dan Sullivan in Alaska. Some of them were open seats, but again, in many cases, a Democrat was thrown out of office. So my question to you, Bob, would you agree with what Tom just said? It wasn't just a pox on both houses. This was a pox on the Democratic Party.
Well, first off, as to the question of the president, we actually have empirical data. The Public Policy Polling did a poll last Tuesday.
Yeah.
That ask people in the swing Senate states, these states,
right,
what were the reasons they voted for the person they voted for, in this case, Republicans. And 60-some-odd percent of them said because they supported the positions of the party. Another 12% said because they liked the candidate, even though they disagreed with the positions of the party. About a similar number said they liked disagreed with the party, but they hated the other candidate. And finally, there were about 14% said it was about President Obama. So much less significant in fact than I think the Republican Party would like to make us believe.
Doug O'Brien, you are shaking your head, raising your eyebrows, everything that you can possibly do to respond.
If the incumbent president is weighing on your ticket to the tune of 14 points, you got a serious, serious problem. And again, I like your...
No, it's 14 points of the people who were...
That's what I just said. Yeah. If your president is motivating 14% of the electorate to choose the other party's candidate, you have a serious, serious problem. And, you know, you can again, parse those statistics any way you want, but we've been doing this a long time. And if 14% of the voters are saying, I'm voting against your candidate because I don't like your president, you're in a hole.
In your view, was there a comment in looking at these eight Republican senator winners, where they threw out a Democrat? What is a common denominator that you see there? Because they all ran somewhat of an anti-Obama campaign, but certainly in the case of Kay Hagan in North Carolina, she was less of a recipient of that than some of the others.
Well, one of the things Kay Hagan did, she did it very late, because and it was very calculated. She wanted to appeal to the base. There's a significant African-American population in North Carolina, and she was looking to solidify that base late with some embrace of the president. But Bob was right. A number of these states are definitely red states. They were states that were poised to go Republican in this cycle regardless. But when you look at North Carolina, Colorado, and Iowa, those are swing states that went for President Obama. The main factor here down this line is quality candidates, good recruiting, no weak sisters. Pardon the phrase, but there were quality candidates.
And North Carolina, Iowa, and Colorado become major swing states in the next presidential election. They were all for Obama last time. Back shortly from Chicago, I'm Bruce Dumont.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. Before the break, I talked about that because of the success last Tuesday, Republicans winning the U.S. Senate seat in North Carolina, Iowa, and Colorado, two states that for the last two cycles went for President Obama, that in 2016, maybe those states open up as potential Republican states, and maybe we are broadening the definition of swing states. Do you agree with that assessment, Tom?
I think so. I think it's going to be interesting. I do agree. Map is flips and is not good for Republicans. We've got Mark Kirk here, who's going to run for re-election. Ron Johnson, Wisconsin. So it's going to be, you know, Republicans are going to be playing on Democratic turf. What's going to be interesting is going to find out finally whether Obama's coalition is unique to Obama or not. Can someone like Hillary Clinton, or if it's not Hillary Clinton, you know, Andrew Cuomo or Martin O'Malley or whomever else is going to, you know, might end up being at the top of the ticket, will they be able to continue to turn out at the same levels, the same type of coalition that took Obama to victory? If they're able to do that, Republicans have a lot of trouble. But, you know, if Republicans are able to somehow regain among some of those Latinos, for example, African Americans, for example, they might not be in as dire a strait as many people have predicted them to be. So we'll have to wait and see. It's going to be interesting.
I mean, the real problem coming up here in the next 2 years is that, not only do we have a new battleground, but we have the people who will really be doing battle on that battleground initially are Republican presidential contenders, mm-hmm. who are going to be behaving like gladiators with each other and basically doing it to appeal to the right-wing stratum of the population in all those states. And as a consequence, I think marginalizing themselves when it comes to the vast electorate that changes
elections. You say pandering to sort of the right-wing elements, but sure. Isn't one of the pieces of analysis out of this campaign is that it wasn't just the Tea Party hard right center. In many cases, it was the establishment Republican that not only won primaries, that Thad Cochran, Pat Roberts, I mean, people of that nature, this may have been more of a establishment Republican victory. Would you agree with that?
I think it was a coalescing victory for the party across the board, because you can see in the list of winners a tremendous amount of diversity among the Republican spectrum, from a Bruce Rauner in Illinois to, you know, some of the much more conservative Joni Ernst, Cory Gardners, who won in arguably swing or Democratic states. You see an ability for the party to come together behind the right candidate.
But do you see North Carolina, Iowa, and Colorado being true swing states?
Oh yeah,
attainable.
Absolutely.
In other words, they're not. In other words. Mm-hmm. There was something that was happening last Tuesday night that indicated that these are not the blue states they've been.
Well, they were swing states in the last election. I mean, I worked with the Obama campaign, and those states were mm-hmm. heavy targets.
Yeah, they were all in play.
Momentum in those states has been with the Democrats for 8 years now, right?
Yeah, so, but I
so
think
the momentum was stopped a little bit.
A little bit. I mean, you know, look, we lost North Carolina last time. Obama lost North Carolina. Almost won in the Senate race in an off year. Look, here's the other thing about these establishment Republicans. Basically, what happened is the Tea Party's positions have triumphed. All these so-called establishment Republicans took on these Tea Party positions and then put on masquerade masks as moderates and tried to package that up. They were successful to some extent by being nice, attractive people like Joni Ernst and toast to an extent, and Cory Gardner more particularly. I mean,
Tom Harkin had to apologize for that.
Well, he did, but I'm not Tom Harkin.
We're calling her attractive.
The thing I think is just really, but I mean, as attractive people and candidates, yeah. Bob Dole is a fairly attractive person as a candidate,
congressman from the North Shore.
But he has exactly the same positions.
That's
on most of the
certainly
on the economic
ridiculous
questions.
Ridiculous.
And he voted.
That's an absolute crock.
Let's think nationally, Tom.
Well, I will agree with Bob in the sense that look, 2016 is now underway. Republicans are going to have a host of candidates. This is not going to be Mitt Romney and the Seven Dwarves or whatever. They've got a really deep bench, people of executive experience that will span the ideological spectrum, probably from the establishment Jeb Bush to the firebrand Ted Cruz, with a mainstream libertarian and Rand Paul and Chris Christie and Scott Walker. I mean, it's going to be – there will be plenty of flavors out there to choose from. But there is this – there is going to be this battle within the grassroots, because Republicans – conservatives, the Tea Party folks have said, look, the last two times we've nominated the most electable candidate and lost, we're not going to let that happen again.
Now, one of the other things that I think was reported late in the evening, and that is obviously when the trend really set in, that there was really a sweep going on. And that is the remarkable thing that was happening at the in the governor's races all over the country. And the big Republican winners, look at this list. John Kasich of Ohio, who, by the way, I would thrust right now into this presidential primary season, whether anyone else will do it or not, I will do it right now, because how he won in that race, the fact that we know that he wants to be president, he flirted with it about 10 years ago. So John Kasich in Ohio, Scott Walker in Wisconsin, Rick Snyder in Michigan, Terry Branstad, the longest-serving governor in the history of this country, reelected again in Iowa. So look at that core of what we have in the Midwest, incumbent governors, and then we'll throw in Illinois a little bit later on. And then in the South, Rick Scott winning a very tight race against Charlie Crist. Nikki Haley back again in South Carolina. South Carolina is a huge night. Now, they got two Republican senators also reelected this past Tuesday night. Nathan Deal in Georgia. Again, he was running against Jimmy Carter's grandson. He won it big. Susana Martinez, mentioned as for the national ticket, a big winner in New Mexico. Sam Brownback, everyone was throwing dirt. They thought they were ready to put the coffin, bring out the coffin for Brownback. He made it back in Paul LePage, lesser known, but in the state of Maine. These were big Republican wins at the gubernatorial level. But my question to you is, because planning for 2016 is organizationally. Right. Now, would you acknowledge, Bob, that when you have Republican governors in some pretty big states, it will make it tougher for any Democrat to organize and win that state?
There's no doubt that the control of state government is hugely important and something that Democrats have to focus incredibly on.
This is reminiscent of the Reagan era.
One of the advantages of that the Republicans have is that a number of states have these off-year gubernatorial elections. There are two electorates in America now. There's a midterm election electorate, and there's a general election electorate. From a Democratic point of view, our job is to figure out how to increase turnout to make it look more like the country in these midterm elections, because precisely what you say, these governor's races are very important.
Midterm electorate that you're talking about, they voted. In my view, their goal was not just throw the rascals out. Their thing was throw the Democrats out.
The midterm electorate is more Republican. It just is. Yeah.
They want to hand to these Republican governors that I just mentioned, and there's some new ones as well. They want to hand to them the control of the machinery of the party.
It's funny. You know, when Democrats win, it is always a realigning election that shows that the people have gained wisdom and vision for the future. When Republicans win, it is a statistical error. And it's really part of the intellectual dishonesty of the left, this sort of garbage about there's no such thing as a moderate Republican that Bob just talked about. That's completely asinine, because when you look at the strategy that Democrats used around the country, they stuck with the vilification, the attack on every Republican is simply a far-right extremist, misogynist, racist, et cetera, et cetera. And they cannot see beyond their own animosity at the diversity of the Republican Party. When you try to lump Bob Dole in with somebody like Ted Cruz, the congressman from the North Shore, it is so intellectually dishonest as to be laughable.
How's he gonna
and
vote
Bob's
on?
Bob's no, vind- Bob's vindicated. Bob has really vindicated himself as a moderate Republican and shown that kind of argument, that stale argument, has really lost its magic.
Now, we just have gone through the list of big Republican winners at the gubernatorial level. They were all re-elected. But let's talk about three new Republican governors, each and every one of them somewhat of a surprise. In blue states, in the home state of the president, Bruce Rauner defeated the Democrat Pat Quinn and is the new governor-elect of Illinois. Charlie Baker is a Republican who's just been elected governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, where they have somewhat of a history of electing moderate Republicans. And Larry Hogan, probably in the biggest surprise of the night, running in Maryland, a Republican winning in Maryland, running against the lieutenant governor of Michael O'Malley. And again, a Republican from Maryland is an oddity. And so let's talk about the other things that were going on in these races that affected these races.
Well, I mean, look, Illinois was a toss-up state. Everyone, you know, you look at the polls. We had a couple polls showing Rauner ahead, a couple polls showing Quinn ahead. I don't think anyone knew that this one was going to work out the way that it did. Massachusetts, you mentioned Martha Coakley turns out to be one of the worst candidates.
Worst in the world.
I mean,
oh, my
history.
God.
Yeah. In history. And Massachusetts does. Now Maryland is also Bob Ehrlich was the governor there prior to O'Malley, so they do have a history of that. But this is one that was sort of off the radar screen. You know, Brown was leading by double digits, but then you had President Obama go in there and Michelle Obama go in there and Hillary Clinton go in there, and all of a sudden we see polls showing this race tightening and tightening. And so that one was the big surprise of the night, unquestionably.
And you,
it's about
you,
being
you,
asleep
you,
at the
you,
switch.
You mentioned the president. We're going to talk about one okay. You mentioned the president, but you also mentioned Hillary Clinton. You mentioned Bill Clinton. And looking at where they went and the results is not a plus for Hillary Clinton as she plans for 2016. We're going to be back shortly to respond to that. But there were no Clinton coattails, or very few, election night. Back shortly.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Back in Chicago, before the break, I was talking about wherever Hillary went and Bill Clinton went, they didn't do well. Bob, how do you explain that? They got big crowds or semi-big crowds. But
I don't know. You say they didn't do well. The question
is... The candidate that they embraced, that they came in for, that they raised money for, lost.
They embraced candidates that were having a hard time in red states and doing their best to win. Look, this is about the battleground.
Raley was not... And that's not a red state.
In its midterm configuration,
Quinn's not
it is
in a
extremely
red state
tough.
Either.
Now, in Illinois, the problem is fairly simple, I think. Normal people are not happy with their current lives.
With
this
their Democrats.
Generally. I mean,
with their Democrats. They're not happy with their Democrats.
They're not happy with their lives. They think the economy ain't improving for them. So they say, have we got a leader who's going to lead us out of that? And they were not impressed that that was the case with Quinn. And it didn't hurt that Quinn spent, 30-some-odd million dollars, and Rauner spent $70 million on ads.
Doug, give us your impression of Hillary and Bill on the road. I mean, was there any place that you could argue that maybe they saved Gene Shaheen? Can you argue that her appearance anywhere else saved a Democrat from losing?
Very rarely is one person's appearance going to move significant numbers. I think with the exception of Barack Obama, I think we saw that 4 years ago in Illinois, where an 11th hour appearance by the president did have a positive impact on bringing out the base. The president came here, the Clintons came here, and the Democratic base collectively yawned, and I think more independents, suburban voters, were reminded about what they are, what they're upset about right now.
Tom Bevin.
I'll go back to what I said earlier about Obama's coalition and whether it's going to be durable for the future. I mean, this just proves that this wasn't Bill Clinton's coalition anymore. I mean, white voters in Kentucky and Arkansas literally are running from Democrats now. And there's certainly Republicans have their problems with, you know, minorities, African-Americans. But Democrats have their problem, too, with white voters. And unless they start bringing those sorts of Clinton Democrat white voters back into the fold, they're going to be hard-pressed, you know, every off-year to win in a lot of these states.
And I was making the point that where Hillary went, she did not do well, or the candidates did not end up winning. But also one could argue that we talked before the break, with Larry Hogan, the Republican, you know, beating the Democratic lieutenant governor in Maryland, this doesn't help Martin O'Malley, does it?
No.
I mean, Martin O'Malley should have been out there saving his own lieutenant governor. So is he ready for prime time as a potential presidential candidate?
I, you know,
what happened in Maryland? What happened in Massachusetts?
I think Maryland is a bizarre circumstance. I don't fully understand exactly what happened. I will say this, though. There were no cards played in that election. There was no campaign. There were no ads. It was taken for granted. And one of the lessons here is, don't take your elections for granted.
Well, except that Larry Hogan was playing a lot of cards, and the cards he played were effective, and they appealed to the voters of that state. The establishment Democrats took it for granted, and they were caught sleeping because Larry Hogan snuck in. He was out there aggressively campaigning against the Democrats and the status quo.
We talked about the impact of Hillary Clinton and, you know, briefly Martin O'Malley as to, you know, whether there was anything they could grab to as they perhaps run for the Democratic nomination. What about the Republican class of 2016? Who were the big winners based on what happened Tuesday night, Tom Bevin?
Scott Walker. Mm-hmm. John Kasich, Chris Christie had a good night as the head of the Republican Governors Association. So a lot of folks. If I could go back just to talking about playing cards and what happened in Maryland, across the river in Virginia, this was one of those surprises. You know, what I think happened is, in a lot of these states, with the amount of money that was spent, and you had aggressive gubernatorial races, you had Senate races, there was nothing going on in Virginia. There's no gubernatorial race. You had so Mark Warner, well-liked, well-known candidate, wasn't really campaigning aggressively.
One-time presidential aspirant.
He was way ahead in the polls. Absolutely. And so that's where you really did see the Republican wave wash up and nearly take him out. I mean, and had it not been for the Libertarian, he would be the 10th Republican seat.
But does that thrust Virginia into a very, very competitive state again?
I think if we don't differentiate between midterm electorates and general election electorates, we are just totally off base.
Well, you've made the point, and
the Republican wave occurred in a pool of electors that is a very different pool than the general election, the on-year electors, and that. So
then,
that,
I guess it doesn't matter. Does
well,
then, it?
No,
then
it does matter a
yes,
lot.
It most certainly
so
does.
What,
and
so
and,
right, so
and one of the problems was that, as Tom said, the Obama coalition does not coalesce
on midterms.
Right. Well, that shows
that
a
is
serious,
a, that
serious
is a problem.
That
is a problem for Democrats.
What is it? What is it about? If we look, let's just talk about the Democratic constituency here now, that were part of that coalition. If the Democrat, let's say Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee, what is it, and we don't know who the Republican nominee is, but would you acknowledge that maybe the black turnout for Hillary Clinton will be less than what the black turnout was for Barack Obama?
No, I don't think that's necessarily the case. And I want to say this. If Hillary Clinton is the general election candidate, I think her appeal to women voters in particular will be quite remarkable. I think
liberal women voters.
women voters of all types.
But what Joni Ernst voters are going to be excited about Hillary Clinton?
I think there are some people who voted for Joni Ernst who will vote for Hillary Clinton who are women.
Just because she's a woman.
No, well, I mean, I wouldn't go that. Because they are excited about having a woman as first woman president of the United States, yes.
Okay, so they want to send a signal just like it was important to have the first black president.
Yes.
So that firstness is more important than necessarily the best person.
I think that's one of the other sort of interesting dynamics of this election. Democrats all across the country ran on this sort of women's issues, equal pay, abortion, et cetera, to the point where you even had Mark Udall being called Mark Uterus out in Colorado. And it really didn't work. It looked as if – I mean, Democrats won women, but only by, I think, 5 points in the exits, where Republicans won men by about 13 points. So the gender gap actually worked against Democrats this time around. But it will be interesting if Hillary's at the top of the ticket. It's version 3.0.
What we don't for the first time in history, again, well, not first time in history, one of the big moments of the other night was that there are now 100 women members of Congress, including your wife is one, Jen Schakowsky. 100 members. Now that's not all 100 of those women are think alike, talk alike. I mean, if we put your wife and Michelle Bachmann in the same room, they're not going to agree on much, right? I mean,
most of them are Democrats,
one of them
but
might
still.
Not come out
I mean,
alive.
You're absolutely right. That's right. And that's a good thing all the way around.
It is a good thing.
And it'd be good to have another 100 so we'd have a balance.
One of the interesting storylines from this election, too, and we'll see how it plays out, is Republicans actually did have a lot of firsts. First woman elected in Iowa, Senator, West
or
Virginia as well. First openly gay member of Congress. Carl DeMaio down in California.
Actually third.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, there was Jim Colby and...
Republican.
Yeah, and yeah, Steve Gunderson from Wisconsin.
Youngest woman elected, Elise... what's her name? I forget.
yeah.
Yep. Okay. African-American.
Up in New York. Mm-hmm. Mia Love in Utah. So
African-American member of Congress from Utah.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Mormon, African-American. So... Some diversity there, some firsts on the Republican side. Again, does that help them change the face of their party to build the kind of national coalition they're going to need in 2016? We'll have to wait and see.
Not a lot. Yeah, not a lot.
Well, it'll never be enough for the Democrats because the Democrats are so completely and utterly committed to pure identity politics. It's about the checking boxes and, so the women who will love Hillary Clinton were not allowed to love Joni Ernst. And it's just, I think that this election also was somewhat of a repudiation of that tired argument.
Of the Republican contender field, who comes out of this as the big winner in your view?
I agree with Tom. I think one of the sleepers is Kasich. I mean, he put together a very, very solid numbers in a key swing state.
But Kasich won on the strength of the collapse of Fitzgerald, the Democratic candidate.
No, he was. Why is it Republicans only win when the Democrats are lousy?
That's what I said. That's what I said. Every
single
sometimes
they may like
such thing as a legitimate win.
On the other hand, the polling showed very close until Fitzgerald collapsed, and for reasons that had to do particularly with him. Well, he had his problem with the person in the back seat of the car. He had his problems with his not having a driver's license for 10 years. I mean, those things caused serious problems, and everybody ran away from him, and he had no money.
Don't they forgive him?
Actually, John Kasich was still leading early on, and he ended up obviously trouncing his opponent. A lot of it was because of the collapse of that campaign. But I think that I hope that the Democrats and I hope that the liberals continue to just sit there defiantly with their arms folded and say there is no such thing as a legitimate Republican win because that's going to lose.
We also talk about planning for 2016. We have a situation where if you're going to Iowa and you're a Republican presidential aspirant, Joni Ernst, that's the endorsement you want. You want Terry Branstad, but you want Joni Ernst. If you then survive that and you go to New Hampshire, they have two Republican a Republican senator, but two women in the Senate. They have a Republican or a Democratic woman governor. Again, women are going to be in a very important. Then they go to South Carolina, where Nikki Haley's going to be there,
and
Tim Scott. Women are going to play a significant role because they are the key endorsements in the first three primary states. And then, if they survive, then they'll get to Rick Scott.
Well, that's true. Look, here's the thing, though, about what you
said. We've got to pause. After that very important point, we have to do
some pause.
We're going to continue with our discussion of Decision 2014 when we roll on from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, City Walk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. We've been talking about a tough election night for Democrats last Tuesday. However, there was some good news for Democrats. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, as expected, was reelected. He will go back. He will be a member of the minority, which, again, he will have to get used to. Senator Jean Shaheen, she beat Scott Brown, and he became the first candidate to lose the United States Senate twice to two women in adjoining states. So that center spread he did for Playboy didn't help him, or Playgirl didn't help him at all. Senator Al Franken of Minnesota, now he's been rather quiet in his first 6 years. I would expect that we're going to hear a lot more of him in his second term. Senator-elect Gary Peters is from Michigan. He's not the former left-hand pitcher with the White Sox. He is the new senator-elect from Michigan, and he takes an important seat, a long-held seat, by the United States Senate from Democrats. Tom Udall was reelected in New Mexico. Cory Booker, to no surprise, was elected in New Jersey. And then at the gubernatorial level, Andrew Cuomo, New York, was a runaway winner. Jerry Brown, even a bigger winner in California. And again, a governor-elect Tom Wolf in Pennsylvania. That was one of the few big wins by a Democrat in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, also an important state. And Tom Corbett, what did Tom Corbett in Pennsylvania do that screwed up the
Republican? It was like Rick Santorum, just flatline polls, couldn't get any reaction. Voters had tuned in.
So Rick Santorum was not able to save him in his own state. So Rick Santorum, his coattails in his own state.
Rick Santorum lives in Virginia now.
I know, but he was United States Senator twice from Pennsylvania.
I wanted to make a quick point. I think what's interesting, too, to stepping back in the broadest possible, taking the broadest possible look, and what President Obama's legacy is going to be. When he was first elected in 2008, Democrats had a 257-seat majority in the House of Representatives. They had 60 seats in the United States Senate. He got himself reelected, but at the same time, his party's lost 75-plus House seats. That's more than, I think, any president in modern history. They're down to 40-plus seats in the Senate. His legacy is going to be one of liberal ascendancy in 2008, but he's going to leave office with
hopefully
the Republicans.
Hopefully his legacy will not be about politics. It'll be about providing health care for everyone in the United States. As Paul Krugman says, one of the most consequential presidents in recent American history in that respect. It will be as a result of his attempts, at least, to change the immigration system, of his executive order that will come soon. I think it'll be in terms of, in the end, by the way, I think by 2016, the odds are very good we can elect a Democratic president and, frankly, take the Senate and potentially the House back. So this saga, this story, ain't over yet. Let's have a look.
Well, by the way, let me just say, I'd like to see if we can get everyone's response to that. Would everyone agree, not necessarily for 2016, but would everyone agree with basically what Bob was saying is The American public is fickle. It changes its mind. And just when we've poured all the dirt on one party and we've said, you know, this party is never going to come back, 4 years later, 6 years later, boom, they come back. So, I mean, we do have this ebb and flow and this teeter-totter of American voters. It's one of the great things about the country. But, again, we can't say that the Democratic Party is dead.
Oh, my goodness. That's ridiculous. Yeah. And
right?
Absolutely.
You may want to say
not.
That.
Okay. No, no. I would never say that. And I think it's
and 2016 for the Senate doesn't look as good.
Absolutely. No.
The map
well,
does not look as
here's
good.
One of the here's one of the problems for Republicans, and it's a good problem to have, is that now Republicans are going to be seen as holding the legislative levers of power. They will bear more responsibility for the progress of the country in the next 2 years. One of the problems is Republican or Democrat, governance is hard. Part of that is because liberals have made government so big, promising everything, it's become unwieldy and very hard to manage. So either party has a hard time satisfying the desires of the electorate.
Should there, in your view, advice, you used to be an advisor to Mark Kirk when he was a member of Congress, a longtime chief of staff. Would you advise the Republicans at the congressional level to pass legislation that they send to the president and force him to veto or compromise on some issues and actually get something done? From a political standpoint, what's the best strategy in your view?
I personally, and I think a number of leaders in the party, would like to see Congress pass legislation that the president can sign.
What would be the first piece that you think they could sign?
I think there's a possibility to hash out a tax reform legislation. That's something the president has expressed support for certain elements of. I would love to see a comprehensive immigration reform. I think it's going to take courage on the part of some Republican leaders, but I think the will is there.
Tom, what's your
say? I think what's going to be really interesting is before this new Congress even takes shape, we've got a lame duck session that's going to happen, and the president has just earlier this week announced that he's basically said he's going to do executive action on immigration before the end of the year.
Stick it in their face.
Which will be somewhat of the well's already poisoned in Washington, D.C. between the president and the two parties, so that's not going to help matters. But beyond that, it's going to be fascinating to see, because Republicans are going to need to show governance heading into 2016, but they've got to do it in a way that doesn't alienate and depress their base. And whoever's leading the top of the Democratic ticket is going to – Hillary Clinton, if it's her, she's going to have the same problem. She's not going to want to run as Obama's third term, certainly, but yet she can't get too close to the president, but she can't run away from that far either without – alienating.
See where we are in 2016. Remember what happened to Al Gore when he did not run as the successor to Bill Clinton. I mean, he should have. Immigration reform. It is the president that is enacting, as best he can, given his limited powers, the will of the people and the will of Congress. Because if that bill that passed the Senate had gone to the House, it would have passed, and it was prevented from passing by the Republican
Bob
leadership.
Just pointed out the constitutional bankruptcy of this administration when he said the president is enacting. The president cannot enact anything. This president has usurped so much power to himself. He will not compromise.
Doug O'Brien is our Republican. Bob Creamer is our Democrat. And Tom Bevan is with the founder and publisher of Real Clear Politics. It's the first stop if you love politics. And again, congratulations on the tremendous success of Real Clear Politics. It's now part of the American political mainstream. Thank you all for being with us tonight. If you're listening to us on radio, we're going to be back for another full hour. We're going to be joined by Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago. And if you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City.
at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
From Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Democrat Bob Cramer, Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago, and Republican Doug O'Brien. Our program tonight coming to you tomorrow base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are not open tonight because this is a recorded edition of our broadcast. Wherever you're listening from coast to coast, again, we thank you very much for being with us. But again, no phone calls this evening because this program is recorded. Charles Lipson joins us in this section of the program. Our Democrat and Republican are also here, Doug O'Brien and Bob Cramer. But Charles, you've had a chance to listen to the first hour, much of the first hour of the broadcast. And I want to get your overall assessment of what happened last Tuesday night and what's the big story here that may not yet have been covered in your view?
I think that everybody agrees it's a rejection election. And what I think the Democrats will say is that it rejected incumbents. And what the Republicans will say, I think with more weight behind it, is that it tended to reject Democratic incumbents. I don't think it was just an issue of the electorate, but I do think that the electorate really is different. And in particular, President Obama was able to generate very large turnout among African Americans, and he had a great turnout machine in general to turn out low propensity voters. I think the big issue now, Bruce, is whether the Republicans can turn a working majority into a governing coalition, at least one that can put bills on the desk of the president, force Democrats to take awkward votes, and move from the party of no to the party of being for something.
Let's talk about one of the, at least some of the preliminary exit polls suggest that the electorate last Tuesday, the Republicans had more support amongst women than they have in the past, more support amongst Hispanics than in the past, and there really wasn't too much difference with support of African Americans, but they also did better with younger voters. As you look at those, Doug, what can the Republican Party do to move from, as Bob Cramer said, the midterm constituency to the bigger, broader presidential constituency for 2016? What can they do to expand and grow on at least some positive signs that were obvious on Tuesday night?
I think a couple of things that they can do, as we've talked about before, is bringing some legislation to the president with the intent of him signing it, being able to sit down and govern it really in the spirit of the Constitution. Yeah, with the two branches of government coming to consensus and compromising and moving the country forward. There are obviously some elements in the Republican Party that are not tremendously interested in that, just as there are elements of the other party that are less interested in compromise. I hope that the president in his press conference Wednesday certainly sounded much like he sounded in 2010 and other times and really, really rejected the idea of collaboration and conciliation, whereas Mitch McConnell and John Boehner have talked a great deal about their interest in working together.
Now, one of the things that the president said on Wednesday was he talked about one of the things he thought that there was agreement on. And that was asking for greater power to deal with ISIS. Bob Cramer, looking at a constituency that sometimes is anti-war, anti-militaristic, how does the president protect the American people and at the same time deal with a political base, not only for himself but for the party, that may be less willing to send troops into harm's way?
I don't think there's a constituency in the United States to send ground troops into another war in the Middle East in general, not just in the Democratic base, but throughout the country. But I do think there's a strong constituency to follow a policy that is aimed at trying to defang and ultimately destroy ISIS. And I think he is so far taken a policy direction that, that recognizes those two things.
Do you see that as a bipartisan possibility, or is the Republican, because of their traditional, more muscular military positions, are they going to be pushing the president to do more? Again, I think I would agree with Bob that I don't think necessarily even there's going to be many Republicans talking about troops on the ground. But again, they also view that maybe the limited airstrikes that we are now engaged in may not be enough.
It's a classic foreign policy dilemma where the practical military or strategic imperatives are balanced with the political realities at home. And as Bob said, there really isn't a constituency for combat troops going in. But anybody who practically looks at the situation realizes that we're having limited success in, with the current strategy. But it again goes to the fact that after 6 years of fumbling around in the dark on foreign policy, the administration still has not really come to the realization that foreign policy is a very, very complicated thing, and it cannot be boiled down to polling and focus groups and talking points.
I mean, this president has done his best to undo the damage that was done by the Bush presidency with the war in Iraq that set the basic – that set the groundwork that allowed ISIS to arise. Some of these people on the right, the far right, Bill Kristol and so on, who have the audacity after the worst foreign policy disaster in 50 years to come on and comment at all just astounds me.
Charles, are you shocked? Are you shocked by that response?
No, I'm not. But it's let me tell you where I see all of this. The first thing I would say about things going to Congress is that both parties are split. The Democrats much more so in resisting a military move. And I should say that the president is not going to be carrying much of the party with him after this big disaster, and he never built any ties to the Congress before. So I think he's in a weak position. Republicans are really split between the Rand Paul wing, and the Ted Cruz wing. Second thing is that the president himself was relying on things that he said, I wanted to repeal. They don't apply, and they're 13 years old. So anything that gets passed, Congress is going to be asking, is this just opening a can that 20 years from now people are going to be saying, hey, you passed a bill back in 2014 or 15 that allows us to do anything we want anytime? People are really concerned.
That's a problem.
In a presidential campaign, what I like about campaigns is that during a primary, you can have some real knockdown, drag-out battles within the party and even within both parties. That certainly was the case, I think, with Hillary and Barack Obama in 2008. But I'm wondering, in this particular case, talking about the Rand Paul wing, I don't know whether there's a whole wing, but Rand Paul is out there talking a lot differently than most Republicans. It isn't just about foreign policy. It's about drug policy. It's about the way in which we treat ex-offenders. There's a whole variety of criminal justice-related things. There's a lot of things that he's talking about which may make him more popular to independents.
And younger voters.
That's right.
But is it turning off Republican primary voters? That's my question. I want to talk about that, and I want to talk about the opportunities for a primary campaign to get into some really serious issues. Back shortly.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back. Thanks very much for joining us. Before the break, we were talking about whether or not in a primary, can we really get into some serious issues? Can we really decide whether or not Rand Paul's position on foreign policy and many of the other Republicans, how they differ? Is this a good knockdown, drag-out time to have these discussions? Because in my view, there's a lot of people. The other big story is a lot of people didn't vote last Tuesday. And I have argued on this program for the last several months now is that of the political candidates that are out there, the one that is most likely to expand the base and get people who have not voted, not just vote Republican, I mean vote, is Rand Paul. Because he's touching some issues that at least to some Republican primary voters might be described as the third rail. He's talking about giving, you know, voting rights to those, former ex-offenders, former ex-convicts. He's doing all these things. He's talking about the disparity of the drug laws. He's talking more like a social justice Republican, and that's a whole new script. It seems to be playing well, but is it playing well Republican primary? When I say it seems to be playing well, it seems to be playing well certainly as far as the media is covering his appearances at Emory University and going around the country talking to African-American audiences. Does that help him in a primary, in your view, Doug O'Brien?
Rand Paul represents a lot of new ideas that have not been really thoroughly debated within the party, and I think that's very, very healthy. The Democrats and the left just revel in what they can perceive or paint as dissent within the Republican Party, because of course they don't allow any dissent in the Democratic Party. But I think it ultimately makes the party stronger. It brings in new ideas, and as you said, it can energize some younger voters and get some of those discussions taking place within the party. I don't know that all of the fascination with Rand Paul is necessarily complimentary, as it may be seeking to paint him as look at this sort of kooky new guy on the block. If I were Rand Paul, I think he'd probably do well for the short term to stick to his knitting and lower his profile a little bit.
Okay, there you go. Stick to his knitting. Okay, so I think we know where Doug is. Let me ask you the Rand Paul follow-up question, Professor. If Rand Paul is out there saying things that a traditional Republican normally doesn't say, and he's building on a base of his father's constituency, which was rabid without question, most people would say that he won most of the debates intellectually. My question to you is, if it's Rand Paul running against six or seven other guys who are varying degrees, 50 shades of grayness or establishment Republicanism, doesn't he win some of those primaries?
He certainly will. I think he represents a certain kind of Jack Kemp element of the Republican Party. There's a kind of freshness about him. By the way, he's a very shrewd, competent politician. So the word kooky may apply to an idea or two, but he's not a kooky politician. He's a smart politician. The problem, I think, that he potentially and what will happen is that the social conservatives are not going to like him because of the libertarian dimension, and the foreign policy conservatives are not going to like him. And he's very vulnerable, I should say, to the criticism that an America that has withdrawn largely from the Middle East and possibly from East Asia, not a very high footprint, has left a world of trouble out there. And if that world of trouble strikes us, his position, which has actually a traditional Republican dimension, Midwest isolationism of Bob Taft, is not going to play very well. So I think that one of the things I'll be interested to see is whether he shifts a bit on foreign policy, especially in a world of trouble. Yeah.
Bob Kramer, Rand Paul is a political commodity. Does he represent something that might be more difficult for a traditional Democrat to run against because of some of the things that he has said on some issues that normally it would be a Democrat articulating.
He has his strengths with respect to social policy, no doubt about it, and with respect to foreign affairs, I think, with a Democrat, with independent voters. His vulnerabilities are on economic policy, where normal people in this country want Medicare and Social Security. He's against them, as a practical matter. Normal people in this country want to raise the minimum wage. Normal people in this country want average people to get more of the share of the gross domestic product with less of it going to the top 2%. He's against all those things. He's basically for economic libertarianism. And that is a huge potential downside for him in a general election. Because, and by the way, in general, this strategy that I think you guys have talked about of the Republicans doing some things that could pass and all that, I think that is exactly right, that would be the right thing for them politically. The problem is that Cruz and that crowd is going to control, going to hold hostage what can be done both in the Senate and, to a great extent, like he did with the shutdown, what could be done in the House.
So you give Ted Cruz a great deal of power and sway within
Cruz and his crowd. I mean, there's a bigger crowd than that.
All right, well, but again, there's also a crowd. There's the Lindsey Graham crowd, which is not the Ted Cruz crowd. So again, you've got
they haven't got a big majority.
You've got more than just two wings of the party congressionally.
I'm going to speak as an outsider. Doug, who has a lot more knowledge of the way that these things work on Capitol Hill, can give you a different perspective. But my sense is that the shutdown of the government was so politically costly and so damaging to the Tea Party terms of political strategy, because what turned out to be the case was that they didn't have a way out of the trouble that they'd gotten the party into.
That's right.
And then the Democrats were able to blame it on them. So nobody looks to them as strategists. Secondly, I think that the large majorities that Boehner now has to work with actually give him more flexibility, not less.
You agree with that, Doug?
Absolutely. I think that one of the things we saw during the course of this cycle, we saw no sitting incumbent taken out by a Tea Party follower in the primaries,
right,
which was a big change. And I think it signals sort of a passing of that that
moment,
movement.
That moment in history.
And, And I think that, yes, everybody is a wolf in sheep's clothing. Every Republican is a right-wing ideologue simply masquerading as a moderate in the
progressive
world.
They all voted to abolish Medicare.
No.
You
but can't, look
that,
at what
that
happened
is a completely
in states like
ridiculous,
Mississippi.
It's a ridiculous
not ridiculous
statement.
At all.
But I think that what we saw in this cycle is in the ebb of the Tea Party's electoral clout within the party. And as Charles said, Boehner's got a better working majority. Some of the more vocal Tea Party members have been marginalized pretty effectively within
the caucus.
He's brought
some into the tent.
He's brought some reasonable ones into the tent, and those others have been marginalized.
It'll help him.
Also,
by the
way, also, it seemed majority to me that, yeah, that we would be talking about, at least today, another Republican senator. We may be talking about it in December or January, and that is it was the propping up of the Tea Party in the third candidate in Louisiana, Magnus, that really kept the Republican from winning that race.
I know something about Louisiana.
You do, because you talk like you're from Louisiana, although you're from Mississippi.
I'm ready to eat fried oysters at the drop of a hat, and I have a lot of family there, and I'm from neighboring Mississippi, and we used to go there all the time. But I will say this about the upcoming race, and everybody's talking about the shape of the electorate and so forth, not looking the same in December. But the key thing is that Senator Landrieu had one major argument in her favor, and that was, I'm the chair of the Senate Energy Committee. But that's no longer true. She will no longer be the chair of the Energy Committee. Now, the Republicans had a response, namely, being the chair doesn't help that much because Harry Reid wouldn't allow you to bring up the bills. But the main point is, she can no longer rely on what was her main argument to the Louisiana voting public.
I want to ask Bob a question. When you talk about the image of the party and the image of the congressional party, the Democratic Party, for the next 2 years, would the Democrats be in a better position with another leader other than Harry Reid?
No, I don't think so. I think Harry Reid is a very effective leader, and Nancy Pelosi is a very effective leader. Right now, because I think there will be a serious battle over the next
what
two
makes
years.
Him, what makes him effective? Given what happened last Tuesday, what makes Harry Reid an effective leader?
Well, first did he lead? First, he has the support of his troops pretty uniformly.
Reduced, but they're reduced.
That is the number one.
Eight of them just walked off the plank. So
they did. I don't expect that will be the outcome in 2 years.
I think he's good at inside baseball, but not outside baseball.
I think that he's certainly good at inside baseball.
And the question is, does having real strength at inside baseball matter now that he's turned the Senate into something that looks like the House?
I think in the minority, it helps to have a strong tactician. But I think Harry Reid has taken on a very negative public image across the country. His adeptness at inside baseball is also what turns off a lot of voters, and I think he had an impact in some
of
these
races. Well,
as
an empirical matter, Mitch McConnell and John Boehner are less popular than Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid.
If he actually stays on for another 2 years, there's a real chance that Dick Durbin would contest Chuck Schumer for that position. If Reid is pushed aside now, that won't happen.
They couldn't live together anymore.
if Reid is pushed aside earlier, which I doubt, then Durbin really can't move in because you can't have a president from Illinois and the Senate majority. I think it would be more difficult, but I think that Durbin is actually in a position and Schumer to contest for that role.
I want to get reaction from that when we come back. I'm Bruce Dumont, recorded edition tonight of Beyond the Beltway. Back shortly.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back. Thank you very much for joining us. This recorded edition of Beyond the Belt. We will be live with your phone calls next Sunday night. And before we just go too much, we're going to introduce our guests in just a moment. But again, one thing that we didn't talk about in the first hour was just basically the television coverage, the internet coverage, the way in which election night has changed so dramatically. A lot of people were watching results, you know, on their iPhone. I was watching the president's press conference last Wednesday, having lunch. I was watching it on my new iPhone 6. I mean, it's really amazing how technology has changed, not only affecting the way in which campaigns use the new technology to get out the vote, but also, you know, on election night and virtually everybody, you know, listening and watching tonight, flipping around watching, you know, whether it's Fox or CNN or MSNBC or you know, the major networks. But the one thing that I want to just kind of call attention to, and going around, and I spent, you know, 4 or 5 hours doing it on election night again, like much of you. I just have, as a longtime talk show host and political analyst, I have to say that John King on CNN is absolutely, positively the best analyst, political reporter that's out there. I really like Chuck Todd of NBC. But on election night, what he's able to do to go to county, there's nobody talking in his ear. You know, a lot of reporters have this little, it's called an IFB. They have it in their ear, and some producer back there is making them sound real smart. He doesn't have it. He knows it. And I just wanted to single him out as, I think, one of the best reporters that's out there. And, again, there were others that did good jobs. But, again, I thought he really just
stood out. You remember the days, Bruce, when the local people used to say that there's some county out there and only half the votes have come in.
Yeah.
And so that's all gone because of computerized sampling of electorates mm-hmm. and so
well,
forth.
Yeah.
And I kind of miss that when,
yeah.
when some local guy – Well, the Chicago vote hasn't come in from several precincts, and when that happens, you know, everything's changing.
I still don't like the idea that all the networks tend to project a winner with, you know, 3% of the vote, and there's a 900
yeah.
vote
yeah.
difference. I still don't like that, but insofar as just reporting and letting me know what was going on, I mean, his not only his encyclopedic knowledge of every county in America, but also being able to work the technology.
Who is really good is Steve Kornacki on MSNBC. I don't know if you watched him at all. Do the same
see,
kind of analysis.
I didn't
analysis,
see him do that. But
he's better than I thought.
Bob, tell everybody who you are for those listening around the country.
Bob Kramer. I'm a partner at Democracy Partners, a political consulting firm, and I'm the general consultant to Americans United for Change, which works on a lot of these issues and elections and was a consultant to the Obama campaign and quite a number of election campaigns.
And you were author of the book called
Stand Up Straight, How Progressives Can Win.
And they obviously were not reading your book prior to the election. Doug O'Brien, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I'm Doug O'Brien. I'm the principal at Prairie State Strategies, a public policy consulting firm. I worked on Capitol Hill. I worked in state government and worked in the Bush administration.
Charles Lipson.
I'm a professor at the University of Chicago. I teach a lot of international politics, but some other kinds of political issues as well. I write a monthly column for the Chicago Tribune, and in addition to that kind of work, I've written a lot to help students with their learning, including a book called Doing Honest Work in College, which if the senatorial candidate on the Democratic side in Montana had read, he would not have been booted out of the election for plagiarism.
May have had a chance there, huh?
I want to go back in the closing half hour that we have tonight, go back and for those who just tuned in, talk a little about some of the things that we talked about in the first half hour of the broadcast, and that is dealing with some of the big winners and losers. And one of the names that came up, obviously, a name that has not been mentioned in previous, I'd say for the last 6 or 7 months, is John Kasich of Ohio. Again, a big winner. Again, you say maybe he was running against a weak candidate, but again, if you're a Republican governor of Ohio, you don't get to be a Republican president of the United States unless you win Ohio. Mm-hmm. And again, now with Ohio a Republican governor and a Republican governor in Florida, again, looking at some of the other primary states, they're doing very well with Republican governors, with the exception of New Hampshire, that has a Democratic governor. But again, when you look at the Midwest, with Kasich in Ohio, Scott Walker in Wisconsin, Rick Snyder in Michigan, and then Indiana, Governor Pence in Indiana, and obviously we have a new governor-elect in Illinois, a Republican, who probably won't be too much of a factor in 2016, but perhaps down the road. You look at the core Midwest governorships, what can they do? And most importantly, of that group, who's the real star? Is it Kasich because no one's talked about him before? Or is it Scott Walker who won three races for governor in less than 4 years and has a media darling, not media darling, but has obviously proven himself in a blue state.
And one more, Mike Pence in Indiana,
yeah, that's
who is almost certainly going to.
What did I say?
You did say him, but in the last two, you didn't include him then. And I would say he's almost certainly going to run. I think that the issue with Walker is whether or not, I mean, he and Paul Ryan, one of them has to, in effect, defer to the other. But I would say that Walker has taken on the biggest issues at the state level, and he's actually won. Kasich is extremely attractive in a lot of ways. And the reason in particular is that while Kasich took on the issues that Walker did and didn't win, he actually changed tack. He didn't do what I would say President Obama did after losing the midterms 2 years in, which was to stick to his guns and keep going. He did more like what Bill Clinton did after he lost 2 years in. He changed policies. The question is, will that be attractive to a Republican electorate?
Doug, your reaction to the same question about, and let me sort of broaden it out, and that is, with so many Republicans thinking that they can be the Republican nominee, we haven't even talked about Marco Rubio, who, you know, a year and a half ago he would have been on everybody's top of the list. It wasn't even in the top, wasn't even mentioned the other night. When you look at all of these players, because they will be competing against each other to try to get some, you know, traction for 2016, will that fly in the face of the ability of the Republican Party to present a singular message to the voters? Because they will be confused. There's going to be too much inter-party fighting amongst the Republicans for jockeying for position?
I don't think so. I think we've seen a number of instances with both parties where a very heated primary has resulted in an ultimate general election win. The more liberal elements in the media, and of course the left, love to just celebrate any disagreements within the Republican Party as the sign of chaos. But they really gloss over a very bitter and sometimes very personal primary between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama that they were able to unite behind. And I think what we've seen this year in a lot of these races this year, you saw disparate elements in the Republican Party uniting to achieve a common purpose. And if that common purpose is clear to the electorate, the Republicans can unite just like Democrats.
For the next year and a half, the national media is going to be focusing on the horse race for 2016. We'll have an open White House seat, if you will. Most of the activity, all of the cast of characters, albeit one, the leading lady, everyone is in the Republican Party. Are you worried that a coronation of Hillary Clinton will be diminished by all of the media coverage and the battle and the vitality and the activity and the action that's going to be going on in the Republican Party?
You know, I don't think the diversity that is the battle is the problem for the Republicans having a battle. I think the problem is that what will happen to some of these so-called moderates in the Republican Party will happen. What happened to Romney? They will start taking on. They will start being anti-immigrant. They will start being against gun violence.
I'm talking about. Not so much about issues. I'm talking about the tactic and whether or not. And I'm not suggesting that there may be even be a viable nomination or battle for Hillary Clinton. I'm just thinking on one party you've got let's say someone who's, you know, just gliding to the nomination, and on the other side, all the oxygen, all the media coverage is going to be about the vitality and what's going on, the new ideas.
I am all for a lot of media coverage if it is coverage of exactly the same type we had last time, where these guys were basically marginalizing themselves every time they open their mouth. I think that may very well happen.
Bob is hitting on an important point. I think that the nature of the debates among the Republicans can potentially harm the party and did the last time around. And what they'll try to do.
They got to get a huge, much bigger stage.
Yeah.
I mean.
But I've got to tell you, Hillary is benefited quite considerably by having the attention elsewhere. The big risk for her is that she just is past her sell-by date in terms of public interest. I'm not talking about her age. I'm just saying people have seen so much of her. and they're so tired.
What's new about her?
Exactly.
Well, we've also got a situation with the media coverage where you make a good point. There's going to be a tremendous amount of attention on the Republican side, but generally we've seen the media is going to take these supposed, you know, new faces on the Republican side and want to pick them apart and put a microscope to them, and using their own center-left prism of critical analysis, while at the same time they are seeking very, very much to protect and defend the reputation of their patron
saint. That's right, because the media is so liberal.
Back shortly.
Exactly.
Chicago Tribune. Don't go away.
Yeah, right.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back, last final segment. I would like to just go around the table again, and just again, for those that have just tuned in your view, if the big headline was Republican, you know, sweep or Republican landslide, what would be the sub-headline for you, Bob, as a card-carrying Democrat? What will be the sub-headline to you?
The sub-headline is that the battlefield shifts to an entirely different set of states, swing states in the presidential and the next Senate group, and an entirely different electorate that is much more difficult. This was the toughest Senate battlefield since John Kennedy faced by an incumbent president.
So as a Democrat looking to 2016, you're licking your chops thinking that in 2 years from now, I'm going to be sitting pretty.
I think that by 2016, there is a good chance that we will both have a Democratic president and have a Democratic Senate and House again.
And Doug O'Brien, let's let you summarize the big unreported story or the one piece of this election cycle that you think has not been given proper coverage since Tuesday night.
Well, that's a different question than you asked Bob.
I know. I
was
did.
Preparing for that
I
question.
I know.
But I think one of the things, it's been talked about a little bit, but I think right now the reality is setting in about what the Republicans need to do to focus their priorities for the legislative session in January. I think, unfortunately, as Charles alluded to, I think the president and the Democrats are going to do so much in the lame duck session to further poison the well and really hamper the ability for real collaboration. And I know many Republicans in leadership would like to seek some areas of collaboration and compromise.
Charles, do you think the biggest mistake that the president could make is the executive order on immigration?
I think if he goes well beyond what there is general popular support for, I think that would be a huge mistake. He might think it drives a wedge into the Republican Party as they think forward. I think the sub-headline is President Obama and his policies viewed as toxic by electorate. That's the sub-headline.
Which policies would they be? Give me one example of a policy that is toxic that the president
Obamacare.
Has. Obamacare is toxic?
Have you seen a poll?
I have seen polls, and it's not
toxic. Let me continue.
Absolutely.
Are you going to repeal it? You want to repeal it?
No. No, fix it.
The fact is, when you get roughly 70% of the country saying the country's on the wrong track, when the Democrats are not really essentially willing to campaign with the president or run on the signature programs of the Obama administration, I think what it does is turns him into a very weak lame duck. And if he tries, the dilemma he faces now is if he tries to push things through on an executive order basis that he doesn't have support in the Senate for, much less the House, he makes it much more difficult to do anything with them after January.
Do you believe that Obama is going, the relationship between the president and Hillary Clinton, is that just going to continue to widen, Bob? And must it widen?
I don't know. I hope not. I don't think it should. And nor do I think it. I don't think it's necessary to do that. I mean, if Hillary Clinton clearly does not want to be the continuation of the Obama administration, no new candidate should. But on the other hand, I think she should embrace the successes of the administration. Healthcare will be one of them for sure. By 2016, that'll be a popular program. And immigration reform.
Why isn't she in the position that Hubert Humphrey was with respect to Lyndon Johnson? That is, she can't really abandon him. On the other hand, she can't embrace him either.
I suspect that by 2016, the president's numbers will improve, A. And B, I think Hillary Clinton, of her own accord, will be such an exciting possibility for large numbers of Americans, partially because she's a woman, that I think that will help carry.
And I will be the starting center for the Chicago Bulls. I think both those things are equally likely. Hillary Clinton is a known quantity. Those who like her, like her. Those who dislike her, dislike her. Moving numbers tremendously in her favor is highly, highly difficult in this situation.
Who would be, Bob, Democrat, question to you, who would be, and we're going to expect complete candor here, of all the Republican names that have been mentioned, who do you think would be the most formidable opponent for Hillary Clinton in 2016?
Well, in an odd sort of way, I think Rand Paul presents himself as a serious contender, although I think he could be appropriate. I think she would beat him.
He could be mussed up, but again, he could also...
And in a general election, Jeb Bush, notwithstanding his name, which is obviously a liability for him, actually in a general election, would present the best profile in many respects if he was not forced completely to adopt Tea Party principles in the primary.
Is there a thirst for another Bush running for president amongst your sphere of influence, Doug O'Brien?
There is a tremendous high regard for Jeb Bush throughout the party. I think, with the exception of some of the most Tea Party-ish Tea Partiers. But I don't think his name is any more of a liability than the Clinton name. And certainly I think his record of achievement up against Hillary's record of celebrity and dubious public service, I think stacks up pretty well.
Do you think, last question to you, Charles, do you think the elections of last Tuesday, do you think that represents an electorate that is crying out for names of the past, Clinton and Bush?
The question answers itself. This is a rejection election, not an aspirational one.
Charles Lipson has joined us. Bob Creamer has been our Democrat. Republican has been Doug O'Brien. Thank you all for being with us for this discussion of our campaign 2014. It's been quite a year. And again, we'll be back next Sunday night to be with you both live on radio and on television as well. Our thanks to Dan Dorfman and Colin Bobbitt for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, City Walk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions.
Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.